Good afternoon, Andrew. How are you?
Hello, Noel. Okay. How's it going? How are you doing?
Now, before we talk about the missed opportunity, the plan approved by the EU, can I ask you about yourself and your group?
I'm working... That press release is what you picked up on, mm-hmm. and that's through the environmental pillar. And that's an umbrella organisation of 28 different environment NGOs that basically are engaged in trying to put the environment into policy, into government policy, mm-hmm. as best we can, acting as a social partner. So the group I represent in the pillar is KELT, the Centre for Environmental Living and Training, which is based in East Clare. But I'm also the PRO of the Woodland League, and who are dedicated to restoring the relationship between people and our native woodlands.
Okay.
And I've been on the show before on behalf of the Woodland League.
Yeah, you've been on with Ronnie many, many times.
I have, yes.
Okay, yeah. Now, why do you think the EU has a missed opportunity here with our plan? What sort
of
mistakes?
Well, it's not the EU, it's that the Irish government.
I wish that's nothing to surprise you there now, would
you? I know, but the European Union has approved their forestry plan.
Okay.
And, you know, they haven't really scrutinised it very much, to be honest with you. And the reason we would say it's a missed opportunity is that it's basically the same kind of industrial forestry model, dressed up a little bit with a few concessions to the environment. And it's going to be, you know, heavily dependent on the non-native exotic Sitka spruce, okay. conifers, and clear felling as the main harvesting method. And basically that model does not provide much employment, does not do an awful lot for biodiversity or our environment. It does not help local communities where it's planted. You know, the trees, when they're harvested, they're taken away from the local community. And rural areas where these trees are planted basically suffer the consequences of degraded soils, mm-hmm. and the water table. Okay. So we would, you know, prefer to see a forestry model that's moving more towards our native woodlands with a different approach, a close-to-nature management system of continuous cover forestry. And one that involves, you know, a lot of manual engagement for meaningful employment and local uses of the material.
Can you see any reason?
More sustainable.
Yeah, mm-hmm. sorry, in my ignorance. So I'll ask you, can you see any reason why they prefer a non-natural thing like this rather than have one of our own plants?
Well, it's the model. The forestry model was adopted in 1904 when we had very little tree cover at all. Mm-hmm. We were down to less than 1%. This is the early 1900s under British rule.
Are we talking about a cosmetic effect when you say that it's just for cover and looks, just something nice to look at?
No. I'm saying that the model adopted was an industrial forest model.
Okay.
That was suited to the British economy at the time. And we've developed that ourselves over years and years, so we've put all our eggs into one basket. And what's happened is, again, there are vested interests that basically benefit from this model. And it's the way the wood industry has been set up. The trucks are designed to carry that timber. The machines are designed to cut it a certain length, height, width. The machinery to saw it up or process it is all designed to cater for these kind of monocultures, you know?
Mm-hmm. Strange.
It's a simple kind of system.
Yeah, so, for instance, just to give an example, if you have a machine that just makes square pegs, that's all you're going to keep doing. You're not going to change it all.
It's a good analogy. It's a good analogy. And it's therefore difficult as well, you see, for them to change. But the problem is that this model, because they're all the same species of tree, they're not adapted to native conditions. They're basically dependent on fertilizers. They tend to be not grown from seed, they're grown from cuttings. They're mm-hmm. genetically weak. So they're potentially vulnerable to disease, to wipeout. So 80% of our tree cover is made up of these trees.
Mm-hmm.
And that leaves us very vulnerable. We have the lowest tree cover in Europe at about 11.5%. The European average is 30%.
Okay.
You know, or 35%. So that's basically what we're saying, in a way, that the model is also vulnerable. We're leaving ourselves wide open. If the pine weevil, it's called, mm-hmm. is a little beetle, and that's already in the country and it's constantly being monitored and being just about controlled. But if that gets an opportunity to run amok, it will just chomp its way through the whole forest estate.
Okay.
And again, I shouldn't even call it forest, because a plantation, a tree farm, is not a forest.
Okay.
What we're doing is tree farming. It's not really forestry. A forest is a society of diverse living organisms, the greatest of which is the tree. And in a naturally occurring forest, you have a mix of species. Do you know what I mean? You have ages, you have different species. You have shrubs, you have trees, you have bushes, all kind of living together.
And is this peculiar to Ireland? I mean, other European countries with natural assets like forests and stuff like that, is this peculiar to the way we do it?
We've the least natural forests in Europe. We've the least natural forest system. But it's a system you will find is going on in the third world, where you have plantations in South America, in Africa. They're the other places where you find this model.
Okay.
Where it's very intensive, heavily industrialized, and very little benefits for local communities. So it is. In the European context, it's the least natural forest system.
Okay. And is that...
But you would have Greece and Spain and Italy would have kind of similar systems, but not as intensive or not as extensive either.
And is it an impediment to employment, like in the other European?
Well, we think it is.
Okay.
We think it is because of the fact, as I say, it's reliant. It's planted, left. There might be some thinning, and at 35, 40 years, it's all cut down in one go by heavy machinery. So there's not. I mean, if you ever travel around the country and looked at these dark places, do you ever see anyone working in them?
Yes. Yeah.
The only time you see activity is either the machine at work or the aftermath. And the aftermath looks like a First World War battlefield.
Yeah. Now, where
everything is cut down, you know?
Yeah, and the way you were talking about the weevil there and stuff like that, is this? Are they prone because of the type of growth that this is, the Sitka spruce? Is that because, or is it the other way around? Because of that, I know I'm sort of talking about a few things, and I'm not too sure about.
That's okay.
I'm just trying to figure out why these things
happen. Connected with that species.
Okay, that's
It is connected, and the weevil has been imported. It's come in with imported Sitka spruce, or in pallets made of American Sitka spruce.
Yeah, but that's what I was trying to
the
get
pine
at.
Pine weevil has come in, and it's here, and basically. The Forest Service has to constantly monitor and try to make sure that it doesn't get a grip. And that means that after a clear fell, all of the stumps are treated with chemicals, which isn't good for soil or water either.
Okay.
And the stumps are treated so the beetle can't get a grip.
Okay. Now, obviously...
You know, like our natural native forests don't require chemicals. They don't require fertilizers. So, again... the emphasis should be on turning this ship around and starting to diversify our forests and move towards a more sustainable model.
Can I ask you about the tree itself? I don't know too much about plant life, but is there any way that it could invade natural resources that we have through the wind or whatever, so, you know, through weather conditions or whatever? Do you know when you get a sort of an integration and an interpollination?
Well, because it's been grown here since the early 1900s, so it's been introduced since 100 years ago in these plantations. And what is starting to happen is, yes, self-seeding is going on.
Wow.
And the wind is blowing it into areas. Now, it's not considered a problem now, but it's quite possible that it could become a problem when we do try to convert this stuff back to native woodlands. We may find that the Sitka spruce is an invasive species. Absolutely. Mm. It's a good point.
Because I think about the duration of any sort of growth to do with trees, and that the length of time it would take. That, you know, a lot of us don't live long enough to see what would happen in that extent. So that's the reason why I asked that question.
And that's the reason also why genetically engineered trees are extremely dangerous, for the same reason.
Okay.
So we don't even understand trees in the wild. And as you say, the longevity of trees, some trees can live to 1,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
Tree time is a whole different concept of time to our understanding of time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, in a perfect world, Andrew, if with representations from yourselves and groups like you and for the environment, if this could be rectified, can it be done in a short period of time, and would it be very expensive? If you were to change the system completely, as you said, it was a missed opportunity this time. If the EU had said no... If the EU had said to the government, no, that's not good enough, you'll have to do better than that. Let's take Switzerland as an example. Let's see you do something. Would it be very expensive, and would it be a long-term thing?
Well, it's like anything. You've got to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the starting of something that creates the impetus or the momentum to finish the job. And, you know, realistically, it would not happen overnight. It would be something that would take time, but within 10 years you could have a major transformation. And if you look at the McCarthy report, the economist Colin McCarthy, who was brought in to look at state assets with a view to privatization,
mm-hmm.
and you know, just going back to that campaign against the sale of the forests, which the Woodland League led, and it was successfully stopped, but the information from his report on Quailcha was quite alarming, in that Quailcha is the forestry company, the state forest company,
mm-hmm.
and it has 1.2 million acres of public forests. McCarthy identified 500,000 acres of their public forest estate as not being commercially viable. So if we take 100,000 of that, should never probably have been planted,
mm-hmm.
in, you know, special areas of conservation, bogs, etc. It is 400,000 acres of wasteland in that, you know, 1.2 million acre estate. Well, that could be targeted by local community groups that are trained to actually look at cutting holes in the conifer plantation to allow natural regeneration of native trees, and planting native trees into the holes. Use the conifers as nursing crops. And you could very quickly train up people, you know, a couple of months training.
Mm-hmm.
In sustainable forest management, coppice management, basically could ensure that you'd have thousands of jobs very quickly all around rural Ireland, and even on the outskirts of towns and cities,
mm-hmm.
where teams of trained community people would be managing these local woodlands.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it could be part of a national public works program that would not cost very much at all.
And you think it would bring a lot of employment into the country?
Of employment. It would bring meaningful employment. It would offer training. You know, if Quailcha have 14 centres around the country connected to these plantations. If you took those 14 centres and took, say, 30 people that were trained over 3 months in the year, that would be, 120 people in each centre.
Yeah, 400.
You'd have about 1,600 people trained up every year.
Yeah.
And they
good.
Could go back to their local communities to train others up. And basically, within 10 years, you're looking at, you know, 25,000, 30,000 people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, Andrew, if you sort of stick your nose out the window and take a deep breath, you'll smell an election in the air. At least that's the way the politicians with their last week with the Ardesh, and you'll hear it with the Labour one, I'm sure, tonight.
Sure.
That's the way they're all talking. So, and also the hope that something new might happen with a lot of the independents, and of course with Lucinda Creighton's new party, maybe announced next week. Can it be turned around if you got something new in and say, well, okay, if people start listening to the likes of you and say, well, we want to, first of all, create employment, but more importantly, the environment.
We want to create sustainable employment. And if we want to create sustainable employment, we need to sustainably use our natural resources. This is the best country in the world to grow trees.
Mm-hmm.
The best climate in the world for hardwoods. you know, and, yes, and we're growing softwood. So we have put this proposal to some of the independents who have their head around it, and we'd like to maybe look at the possibility that Sinn Féin might consider taking this up. They may have a chance to be involved in government, who knows, with independents.
Yeah, but they only take it up in the course of leading up to an election. I mean, you want someone to follow through on something, surely.
Well, you would, but I think there's been so many false dawns and false promises that I think if there was any possibility of some kind of fresh government, that some new vision is required. Mm-hmm. And that this is one potential way to create Indigenous employment, Indigenous profit, and benefit with multiple benefits for the environment, for society, and local communities.
Okay.
And as I said, meaningful employment.
Yeah.
Based on the use of our natural resource. Like, well, at the moment, if you take that economist's report, Colin McCarthy, mm-hmm. of 500,000 acres of a 1.2 million acre estate as wasted, well, you know, that there's something amiss there.
Mm-hmm.
There's mismanagement going on a grand scale.
Okay,
that needs to be corrected.
Yeah, just thinking, and when I've been covering a lot of the water protests over the past couple of months, nearly over the past year, a lot of people get into the group, see so many people, because they're handing out leaflets about forestry and about the environment and fracking and saving the trees and all that, everything that can get out there. So, and people are listening now more. Do you find that people are listening more now and getting more politicised and getting more interested in what's happening in their country?
Well, from leading the campaign against the sale of the forests, we did notice, you know, after so many years of austerity and when people were so punch drunk from being downtrodden with these measures, austerity measures, that there was an awareness came about the trees regarding our natural resources. And we find that's transformed to the water campaign, mm-hmm. which is another natural resource.
Mm-hmm.
And the two of them are linked. So there is a more, definitely more of an awareness of the natural resources. And of course, that's where the true wealth of any country lies. So if the people don't have access to their natural resources or ownership,
mm-hmm.
well, then it's very difficult to create wealth or employment. And that was another thing the Woodland League proposed, was that during the presidential election, that Article 10A be changed of the Constitution, because it currently gives the rights to the natural resources belong to the state. We asked for that to be changed to the people.
Okay.
And we still would be looking for a campaign by all, an election campaign, basically, where all candidates would be asked to look at the idea of ensuring that the natural resources of Ireland are vested in the people, and that they're sustainably managed for the people into the future, for the common good.
Okay. Are you optimistic for the future? I mean, as things are going on, you make representations and reactions, and maybe, as I say, a new government.
Well, I wouldn't be over-optimistic. I'm a realist, and realistic enough to know and be cynical about mm-hmm. politics.
Sound like
but
me,
where
so.
The hope is the awakening of the people.
Yeah, yes, a bit like
and
me as well.
Where we see the reforestation occurring is by the people, by communities. And, you know, we'll be looking to push a campaign for local communities to restore their own forests and look to manage them as well.
Okay.
Into the future. And that's where the hope is.
Okay. Just before you go, as I say, through my ignorance, just a question. I mean, we're talking about Can I ask a question as regards the say, slight infestation with this? Could it blow its way into urban areas?
All around.
Pardon?
Sorry?
It's already in there, I'm afraid. No, but you know, like, I mean, I have a couple of trees in my back garden, and one of them looks a bit foreign to me. I mean, could it get in and all that sort of carry on? Just the way it blows around, I mean, or does it stay in forested areas?
This is the pine weevil. Well, the pine weevil is only connected with the pine trees,
okay.
So it's not really an issue. But we do have other diseases coming in that are climate change related.
Okay.
And we had ash dieback. And ash dieback is wiping out our native ash.
Okay.
You know, the ash that we make our hurleys from has been imported from other countries. the Forest Service allowed the importation of ash plants and they contain disease.
Okay.
So that's an example of a major mistake that the authorities made. And that potentially could happen with other plants they're allowing, like in this forestry program, eucalyptus and a hybrid aspen they're talking about for biomass.
Okay, maybe you could talk to that. We're sorry to interrupt you. We're running out of time, but maybe you can talk about it another time. You have a website, Andrew, that people can look up and find out about all
you've
been talking about.
Keltnet.org.
Okay.
And that highlights the events and activities of Celts, which we basically focus on traditional skills to do with ecological living and training. And then the other is the woodlandleague.org, which the website is actually would be down probably tomorrow because we're putting up a new website in the next few days, so maybe during the week if people want to go online.
Okay.
It's up at the moment, I think.
Okay.
But so look, thanks for the opportunity.
Not at all. I hope to be talking to you again in the future and you can educate me a little bit more.
Okay.
Thanks very much. Thank you, Andrew. Bye.